open up the champagne. Pop. It's my house, come on, turn it up.
Hear a knock on the door and the night begins. Cause we've done this before, so you come on in. Make yourself at my home, tell me where you've been.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio. This is Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome in on a beautiful Monday in downtown Cleveland and all around the area today. Jim Donovan with you on Cleveland Browns Daily and for Nathan Zagura. And happy to be with Matt Wilhelm once again. I always enjoy when I fill in for Nathan and you are here. These are the amazing days of doing Cleveland
Browns Daily. They absolutely are. These are the dog days when there's not too much to talk about.
These are the dog days. You're right. As we get set for training camp, July 29th is the go day. Everybody ready to go for that. And what a time it has been, huh? Here in the last week?
It's been amazing.
Unbelievable.
And I have to tell you, this is the first time I've talked to you since, but but watching the coverage of you during the parade was awesome.
Thank you very much, from your little perch.
Yeah,
we had an amazing perch. We are at this brand new Hilton, which is connected to the convention center. And I think, you know, initially put up in response to the city getting the RNC, and it's like brand new.
Now, were you on like was it a balcony?
Yeah, it was like
in a room?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I have to tell you, because I'm Catholic. All right. It was very much like being the Pope.
I bet.
You know how the Pope comes
everyone
out?
Everyone looking to you?
Yeah. Everyone, when the Pope comes out on a Sunday to give his message or on Easter Sunday, and they have hundreds of thousands of people in Vatican Square and in St. Peter's Square taking a look up to as he comes out the window of his apartment, that's what it was like.
I bet it was.
I couldn't believe it.
It was cool. And yeah, just an amazing day. And I thought, and it's something we can get into to share your perspective on, you know, LeBron's speech and his touching upon every teammate. As well as the ignoring of Dan Gilbert's comments per se, but overall, I thought the Cleveland's finest did a great job, you know, protecting that many people down there, clearing those streets to allow the parade to finally get going.
I in the morning misjudged everything. Okay, I got up. I thought I got up early enough. I got up at like 6:30, and I was getting ready to get on my way. I left the house at 7:20. We were on the air at 10.
Okay.
The parade was supposed to start at 11.
Correct.
Okay. Badly misjudged that. Got on 71, and I'm getting on at 3:03 right at the Hinckley-Brunswick exit and entrance, and I get on, and I don't move at all.
Really?
It is packed. So I'm wondering if that's just, well, maybe it's everyday traffic at that hour, because I don't travel at that hour. I travel in the afternoon and late at night coming home. And I have to tell you, I did not make it to Channel 3. And the plan was to get to Channel 3 and then walk down, or somebody would get us down to our broadcast position, which we're on Lakeside Avenue. And so is
not
the Hilton.
Not too far.
No, no. And anyway, I am getting off. It's 9:15
now. Were you freaking out?
I was totally freaked out. It's 9:15, and I get off at West 25th. Because I didn't want to try going around that way. And I'm trying to dump the car somewhere. And I'll tell you where I dumped it down. Somehow I got down by First Energy Stadium.
Really?
And I dumped it in the parking lot there and ran up the hill and got to the Hilton just in time. 6 minutes before we went on the air. 6 minutes before we went on.
Crazy. So it took you 2+ hours.
Almost three. Almost three.
To make it, what, 20 miles? 25?
25 miles.
25 miles. That's crazy.
Oof, wow. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, we did not go to the parade. So we watched it from home.
Mm-hmm.
The parade went long, so it took a jump in the pool, still came out, and the parade was still going on.
Yeah.
But it was a great perspective whether you were at home, and I think for those that went down there, you know, Nathan's perspective, you know, from morning to evening and what he accomplished throughout the parade was amazing. But then you talk to other people that went down to Mall B and were waiting there for that parade.
Well, I was.
It was a tough sell for 4 or 5 hours, you know, for the hour and a half that they were on the stage.
Yeah, it really was. It was a long time coming, and I don't know how you anticipate crowd numbers.
No.
But if they were a little
How do they do that?
Well, what I understand, when there are quads in the city, like the city is divided up into quads. Because I asked the same question when they were coming up with, well, we think we're at 500,000, now we're at 800,000, now we're at 1 million, now we're at 1.3 million. There are quads in the city. If those quads are filled, they have a certain number.
X amount of people fill a quad.
A capacity.
Gotcha.
And then I think they have a certain amount of quads. They multiply that.
Okay.
You know, and carry the one over to the three. There you go, 1.3 million. It was amazing.
It was really amazing. It really was. Something Cleveland should be proud of.
And they, and there's no doubt about it. They are. I have to tell you, no matter where you go, since they've won the title, I mean, everyone's in a great mood, and everyone's got Cavs gear on. And,
yes.
And that's great. I think it's fantastic. But now we move on.
We do.
Yeah, we got to move on now, okay? And suddenly, the Indians are rip-roaring hot.
I was going to say it if you didn't.
Unbelievable.
They are.
Okay? And they are hot. They're like one of the best teams in baseball right now. They have the longest winning streak. They've won 9 in a row. That can go to 10 tonight. They're in Atlanta to play the Braves, and the Braves only have 26 wins on the season. So, I mean, they are just amazing right now. So they kind of quietly got their act together while the playoffs were going on. Because remember, this has been going on since April 15th.
Right. And I'd be surprised, and maybe you know, simply doing what you do, is what was the Indians' record at the start of the Cavs playoff run? Were they about 500?
Yeah, they were about 500. Yeah, okay. Because they had gotten off to a little bit of a tough start. Not a great start. Not their typical bad start. I mean, they have been a slow starting team through the years, but it was okay. It wasn't great, but it hovered around 500. Yeah.
So do you think that, and I've listened to some sports talk radio as well, that it's a very good thing that the Indians are where they're at this soon in the season because they've been such a bad starting team and a second half team?
Oh, absolutely. I think that there are road markers in the Major League Baseball season, okay? And I think the first one is Memorial Day. Where are you on Memorial Day, okay? And that's kind of the first time you take a check. You kind of have a read of what are you doing,
type of team you are.
Yeah, what kind of team you are. I mean, the weather shakes out then by that point in time. I mean, you're playing in real bad weather in April, especially here. And so you kind of get a look, where are we on Memorial Day? Then July 4th is the next one, okay? And the Indians look like they're going to be in terrific spot on July 4th. Okay, then Labor Day, okay? And a little bit before that, the trading deadline, which is right at the end of July. But Labor Day then becomes the next one, and then boom, it's the push.
Yeah.
The last push, then that last.
And when is the All-Star break?
Well, the All-Star break's coming up right in the middle of July. So
okay.
It's pretty soon.
So just after the 4th of July. Gotcha.
That's right.
But in front of Labor Day.
Yeah, I think, in front of Labor Day is the trading deadline, and then you find out, are you a buyer, are you a seller? But then you get to Labor Day, and, I mean, that's where you put the gas pedal down, and you make your move.
Yeah, and do you think, and again, simply because I love the Indians, I like baseball, but I don't love baseball, so therefore I don't follow baseball very closely. Now, do you have some teams that are middle of the road that may not see a run in their future, start selling to prepare for year after year, that would allow a team like the Indians to continue, if we keep that pedal to the metal, continue to gain ground and maybe gain assets, and some of the competition towards the end kind of falls off?
Yeah, you'll take a look at a team that might have taken a run, okay? A team like, let's take a look at, take a look out west, okay? Take a team like the Angels, okay? They may decide they're going to sell off some people.
Sure.
You take a look at, for instance, anybody that has like a big contract and the team is underachieving. I mean, you take a look at like the Phillies, okay? They got off to a surprisingly good start, and now they've receded. And then yet sitting at first base, they have a guy like Ryan Howard who's got a big contract.
Sure.
And they may say, hey, can we unload him? And then you have a team like the Cubs, okay, that says, hey, we are incredibly good right now. Do we tweak it a little bit and get one more something?
Piece. Sure.
And they become a buyer. I mean, suddenly a team, for instance, a team like the Yankees. Okay, the Yankees, who are always buyers, they could be sellers this year. You know, things like that. Team like the Twins could be a seller on anything that had a big contract because it's obvious they're rebuilding and maybe they want to go all the way into rebuilding and get a lot of prospects and get some money off the books that way. Those are the teams that kind of you take a look at it.
And again, I think I know the answer, but I'm not sure as of recent, but the mentality of the Indians. Are we a team that's like, we're good with what we got and we're going to ride this through, or could they be a buyer?
Well,
at some point to make a push.
Because
I know that comes money. Yeah. You got to spend the money.
Well,
it doesn't seem like what we do.
Sure. And money becomes a big factor for them. There's no question about it. And then the other part of the equation, Matt, is attendance and the lack thereof.
Yes.
I mean, the other night they had, I think in their last game, when they were here, before they went on the road. They had 21,000. That was the night of the parade. Okay, but before that, I mean, they're in the, you know, they struggle at attendance. They're at the bottom of, they're at the top of the standings, but they're really historically, unfortunately,
right,
back down.
Will that change now that the Cavs is done a little bit?
I would hope so.
Okay,
and also because they're a really good team right
yeah.
now. The problem with them, I think, is that everybody wants to get into their pitching. Everybody wants their pitching, and that's why they're up there right,
right
now. Is that they, you know, they have great arms and
sure.
they have a lot of young arms, and I don't think you want to give up that. So I think when people call them, the first thing they're going to say is, "Hey, we want Trevor Bauer. Hey, we want Carrasco." You know, and stuff like that. And I think at that point, the Indians are going to say, "No, we're in it to go win it."
Sure.
Now, the only thing I think that the Indians might want is they may, you know, they want to dabble and get another bat. I mean,
right.
remember, they're doing all of this without Michael Brantley.
Brantley
is not, has not been
is
around.
His back?
It's his shoulder.
Shoulder.
He's
okay.
got biceps tendonitis now.
Oof.
One would think that maybe he pushed that, and I think I'm going to say he pushed it. I would think that the Indians didn't push him. I would hope not. But, I mean, he had shoulder surgery in November. He was back at training camp. He was making remarkable progress. And then he came north with them, and they activated him. He only played in a few games in some really bad weather, cold, cold weather.
Early in the season.
Yeah. And he felt more pain.
Okay.
And unfortunately, he cannot get rid of that pain
wow.
now. So, I mean, they're doing this without him.
Right.
Arguably their best player,
sure.
position player. So they're a great story. I mean, they are a great, great story. So I would think that they would be a buyer right now.
Yeah.
If they want to tweak something and go after
hope,
something.
Yeah.
And it would be a little, probably a little bit more offense
sure.
for them. Because they give the ball to those guys, the five of them, when they go out to get a start, and they get phenomenal pitching.
It seems so.
There are very little nights that you would say, boy, they got a clunker tonight. Kluber was bad tonight. I mean, I know. And really, Kluber's probably the one who has had more of the down games than any of the other guys.
Yeah.
It's been amazing. So good for them. Good for them. That's and I think that they are feeding a little bit off the Cavs.
I hope so. I sure hope so.
You think
they
so?
Should. They should ride the wave while you can. You know, keep it running. Keep running hot to get to those landmarks that you talked about. There's always going to be a little ebb, you know, when you play that many baseball games.
All right,
but
what about these guys here? Can they feed off of it?
I believe they can. And I think it coincides with what Hugh Jackson's been preaching, that winning. Winning, winning, winning. It's and you just look, and I think as you understand the dog pound and you understand Northeast Ohio, you look how this city turned out in numbers to support one of their own in LeBron James
right.
and the Cleveland Cavaliers. And then, as I just said, you know, will they, you know, turn their attention to the Indians until they get their Browns running again? And I sure hope so, because the Indians are deserving of our attention because of the way they're playing. So it kind of coincides is we know 70,000 plus people are going to be at First Energy Stadium each and every week
mm-hmm.
to see what this, you know, because it's
yeah,
the Browns,
yeah,
because we're a football city.
Right.
But I think we would love to have 70,000 people in December when we're playing, you know, maybe games that don't count because we're not in the playoff hunt, but count towards where we're headed
yeah.
late in the season.
If you were one of the 14 guys that were picked by the Browns in the draft this a few weeks ago, a couple of months ago in the spring, if you were one of the 14 guys who were picked and now 13 of the 14 are signed, I know
yeah.
number 14 will sign, and you're getting ready to come to training camp here at the end of July, and you just watched what the city did for the Cavaliers, wouldn't you say to yourself, wow, can you – and they tell me – I'm being one of the rookies now – and they tell me that it's really a football
Brownstown.
Town.
A yeah.
Brownstown. Can you imagine the support we would get if we turned this thing around
yeah.
and
I think,
won?
Yes, and I think that's the greatest lesson that they could have gotten because –
because people have always tried – Doug Deacon always talks to me about this. I don't know if our young players understand the history – of the franchise and what it means to play here. And because there hasn't been a great deal of success, they haven't been able to even see it.
Correct.
You know, in person.
So,
but I think that something like that, even though it's in a different
yes.
sport, they get to the core of what fires up these fans.
I agree, and I think there's a series of events. You have the hiring of Hugh Jackson, you know, the change of the culture that we've been hearing from the players and seeing, at least for you and I, attending OTA practices
mm-hmm.
and seeing and minicamps, the difference. That's why we urge everyone to come to minicamp and see the difference for yourself.
Right.
But then you have the preaching of the winning and the motivation that Hugh Jackson brings, you know, along with football. Then you have the winning of the Cavaliers and them buying into that mentality. And it's like, they don't have the same way that the coaches don't have an opportunity to judge former Browns players on what they did prior to them coming in.
Yeah.
I feel like these rookies have nothing else to go off of from a fan base other than how they turned out in force to support our Cavaliers, right, or the attendance they've shown, right, at training camp, when training camp actually starts. So that fills you up with confidence, yeah, and it feels like you're playing, you know, for a team you've played for more than just, you know, 4 or 5 months. It's, mm-hmm, you know, as some of these guys probably did in college.
Yeah.
After 3 or 4 or 5 years at one place, you're passionate about Happy Valley like Carl Nassib is, or you know, down in Waco, right, with Baylor.
Yeah.
You know, they're not the fan bases we think of when we think of college football, but they know them to be tried and true. Yeah. Now they need to learn that about this fan base.
Yeah, except where you played.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean that fan base, correct, is absolutely amazing. The telephone number is 216-578-0850. Okay, now I have a couple of ideas about today, all right? In honor of the Cavs championship last week, why don't you give us a call and tell us what your three greatest moments in Cleveland sports history have been. The three greatest moments in Cleveland sports history have been. And you can include what happened last week.
Sure.
In fact, you should. Okay. All right. Now, the other thing is I am all about great calls. Okay. Radio calls, television, yeah, calls. Great calls in magnificent moments. And I'm going to give John Michael, who's the radio voice of the Cavaliers, a really strong tip of the hat. I thought he had a really good call of the Cavaliers winning the NBA championship a week ago yesterday, last night. Okay. I thought he had a great call. He included, you know, the 52-year drought is over. You know, this impossible dream has come true. A little bit of the Al Michaels call, yeah, from the United States beating Russia at Lake Placid. He had it all. It was a good call. I mean, a really good call. Now, as a play-by-play announcer, you always say to yourself, okay, if you're announcing a big game, a championship-type game, do you write it? Do you get it prepared? Or do you just let it flow? Do you just let it happen by the moment? In other words, do you have a little legal pad there and say, okay, if they win this thing, do I say, and the Cleveland Browns, since 1960, I dream this, okay?
Sure.
Making that call. All right. I want all of our listeners out there, I don't want you to be bashful this afternoon, okay? I want you to dream right now, okay, that the Browns are about 7 seconds away from winning the Super Bowl. Or you can say the AFC Championship. I'm not, you
sure,
know, but let's go all the way. Let's put all of our chips in the middle of the table. Okay? And I want to hear what you think the call should sound like if the Browns won the Super Bowl. Now, I want to go to when you won it,
sure,
at Ohio State. Paul Keels and Jim Lachey, right?
Correct.
Okay, Jim Lachey. They had the call of the you guys stopping Miami in overtime,
yes,
to win it. Okay? And it was a great call. But... the color guy, Jim Lachey, kind of jumped in on Paul Keels' call. In his excitement for Ohio State winning it,
that emotion,
he jumped in. Now, the only thing is, you got to remember, it's radio.
Yes.
Okay, you got to lay out, as they say. You know, that's what they'll say in your ear. Lay out, let the crowd come in, feed it, you know, stay out of it. That's especially on TV because,
right,
the pictures carry it.
It is.
All right. So it was a great call by Paul Keels, and I understand Jim Lachey, what he did, but he jumped in on the call, and he kind of fudged. He ruined the call a little bit.
He did.
Okay. Do you agree? Have you heard
I do, and I've heard many with some of the comeback wins, you know, in college or professional football.
Yeah.
When you get to the actual call, the
right,
game call, how the analyst, who is most likely a player, comes in on the host who's trying to, again, you know, what did you say? Lay out.
Yeah.
They're laying it out, and they're
supposed to lay out.
But the raw emotion of the player in us comes out either on the microphone or in the background in our chair as you step away and go crazy in the booth.
Now, there was a great call when I was growing up as a kid when John Havlicek stole the ball for the Boston Celtics against the Philadelphia 76ers with a gravelly voice, Johnny Most. And Havlicek stole it! John Havlicek stole the ball! It's all over! I know that was pretty good.
That
was pretty good, okay? Vin Scully's had some great calls when Kirk Gibson hit the home run that beat Dennis Eckersley in the Oakland A's. Yeah, unbelievable. I mean, there are just some great calls, but it can bring goosebumps up your spine to think about that moment. You know that Gibb Shanley had a great call when the Browns won in 1964 on the radio, okay? And, you know that Tom Hamilton has had some just magnificent calls when the Indians have won big, okay? There's kind of a funny call at one point, and that was, and see if the fans remember this one, that was in Game 6 of the American League Championship Series. The Indians were playing the Orioles. It was a scoreless game, well into extra innings, and if the Indians won the game, they were up 3-2. It was at Camden Yards, okay? And Tony Fernandez got up and hit a home run to right field for the Indians and gave them a 1-0 lead. And Herb Score went, and there's a drive to right field, and it is gone, a home run. And the Indians are going to the World Series. Maybe. Because Baltimore had to bat
right
in the bottom of the inning.
Yes.
So, I mean, some announcers will have it ready on a sheet of paper, okay, and have a historic call kind of ready, all right? Others just let it go. So I want the fans to – I don't want you to be bashful, okay? I want you to call in. When we go down memory lane on this show, and when you and I have sat here and we've gone down memory lane on some great moments, it's amazing how the people participate on that.
It is.
I hope they call. Anyway, 216-578-0850. And they can tweet us at
@Browns_daily.
Okay.
On
all
Twitter.
Now, a couple of headlines today, all right? Number one, James Harrison has come out and said that he is willing to be interviewed by the NFL about that Al Jazeera documentary about players receiving PEDs from a pharmacist. Okay, now this was the one that mentioned Peyton Manning, Clay Matthews, Julius Peppers, Mike Neal. I believe I got them all with Harrison.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe some, and there were others too, but these were the NFL guys. He has said he'd gladly do the interview with the NFL with stipulations. Number one, he wants it done before training camp.
Yep.
At his home.
Yes.
And with the commissioner, Roger Goodell.
Correct.
In attendance. He doesn't want some lackey to
right.
come in.
Yeah.
Some assistant deputy.
Right to
come
the
in.
Source.
Right to the source.
Yes.
What do you think is going to happen in this thing?
I think it's very interesting. I don't think anything is going to happen. I don't think, James Harrison probably will not be interviewed because it's not going to be on his terms. I wouldn't imagine Roger Goodell would come down to his. But the one thing to me, as you list the names or as you look at the names, and I say this simply be this coming from the mind of a professional athlete. Professional athletes, we tend to follow those of success, meaning if you have a good agent, you're always shopping your agent to find a better agent who can make you more money.
Yeah.
If you have a new training technique, everyone's going to follow your training technique. If I can avoid injury, I can get stronger, I can be more explosive. You're always looking for that technique. So I find it very interesting that, as you listed, Clay Matthews, Mike Neal, Julius Peppers, they're not only all Packers,
they're
essentially all outside pass rushers. So they're outside linebackers / defensive ends in that defense, which means they're in the same room together an awful lot. So I find it very interesting that the three of them are all a part of this indictment.
All right, what if they refuse to be interviewed? What would happen then?
That I don't know.
Okay.
It all depends.
And didn't the guy who is, quote, the pharmacist recant what he said on Al Jazeera?
Yes, he did. But, it brings up the greatest suspicion of, how much did his pocket get laced to rescind that?
Yeah.
And I think that's where the NFL really is trying to get to the bottom of.
Okay. Peyton Manning would not be talked to, I would imagine, because he's not in the league anymore, right?
Okay. No.
If you were a Browns player right now, and take me to the days when you were 3.5 weeks away from reporting to training camp, are you still conditioning or are you VACO right now?
With them, I would have said we probably would have done a little bit of downtime, a vacation for a week to 10 days, and then right back in. So right about now, I would imagine with, about 30 days prior to your reporting date, you're doing your best to get out of vacation mode and get back into work mode. Now, mind you, you're going to put 3 to 4 hours into your craft, meaning your body and potentially film watching, playbook, so on and so forth. It's not like your life has to stop. You can still enjoy your vacation and do the pool day, go out to the lake, go hit hit your golf clubs, whatever it might be. But you start getting into the mode of, and you can ramp that up as you go. Because the one thing you don't want to do, and we had the strength coach reference Danny Shelton, is when the new staff came in, Danny was going hard as if he's getting ready for training camp in, the end of February.
Right.
So, and I know he wanted to get the weight off, and he did ahead of schedule and so on and so forth, but you can't just go gangbusters all year round. Your body needs that rest. And I think that's something that strength and conditioning staff has done very well.
Okay, now they had 14 guys that they drafted. 13 of them are signed. The linebacker, Joe Schobert, just signed.
Yes.
So that's number 13. Number 14 is
Carl Nassib.
From Penn State.
Yes.
Okay. I am very happy now that the days of contract holdouts for rookies are over. I always thought that was unbelievable. You would draft these guys specifically, and it could go second round, but it was always your first round pick. Your first round pick was never there for the first 10 days of training camp. And they come in and they're lost. And
out of shape, invariably
they get injured.
Correct.
Braylon Edwards.
Yes.
Braylon Edwards was one. Brady Quinn was one, not of his own doing.
Right.
Okay, the Browns stalled that. They didn't want a quarterback controversy that year with Charlie Fry and Derek Anderson because they knew there would be a tremendous amount of hoopla with Brady Quinn coming in. So they kind of stalled his contract, and he was 7 days late.
Yep.
Okay. I'm glad that's over. So this kid will sign, right?
He will sign. And as I said to you prior to jumping on air, I'll be honest, he's got a little bit of leeway in the third round, as we found out, for those people who don't understand why some of the third round picks, they've got a little bit of bargaining power. And I wouldn't be surprised if what they're holding out for is something between, you know, $30,000 and $75,000.
Okay.
You know, which is not a lot of money in the terms of what his four-year deal is going to look like.
All right. Now, so in honor of the Cavs championship, what are your three greatest moments in Cleveland sports history? If you'd like to tell me a great call, or if you have ever thought of yourself as somebody that could make a great call of the Browns winning the AFC championship or the Super Bowl, we're going to let you come on. This is going to be like that. Remember the ESPN had that dream job segment where you could become an ESPN sports anchor? Yeah, there was
a
kid from Ohio that won
it.
Yeah, Dave Holmes won it. And anyway, we'll talk to you. We have a lot to get ready for as we get ready and count down the days until July 29th when the Browns open up training camp here in Berea. Okay, we'll do that. We'll get started here on Cleveland Browns Daily. Thanks for being with us. Matt Wilhelm, I'm Jim Donovan. Nathan Zagura off today. We'll take a timeout and be right back.
Now back to Cleveland Browns Daily with Jim Donovan and Matt Wilhelm on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Coming up at 2 o'clock, we're going to talk to Jerry Bembry, senior writer at ESPN's and theundefeated.com. And he wrote an article, I read it this morning, on the anniversary of the death of the very talented Brown safety, Don Rogers. When they started the whole dog pound thing, I mean, Don Rogers was a great, great part of that. Hard-hitting safety who just had an amazing career in front of him. He died of a cocaine overdose the night before his wedding, Matt, in Sacramento, California. We'll talk about that. It's the 30th anniversary of that happening.
It's crazy.
Yeah, that was unbelievable. Sam Ritigliano, of course, coached him. So did Marty. But they were getting set that year to come back and have a big, big year, which they ended up having.
Yep.
But that's how Felix Wright, I think, came to the Browns.
Yes.
Because he filled the void, and it was a big void, with Don Rogers passing away. I'll never forget when it happened. We'll talk about that at 2 o'clock. Right now, we're going to go to the telephones, 216-578-0850. Reggie is in Youngstown. Hi, Reggie. Welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily. Hello, Reggie.
What'd you say?
You there,
hello?
Man? Hi, you're on. Yeah, you're on. You're on,
okay.
Reggie.
Okay, yeah. No, hey, guys, I just wanted to ask you in general stuff far as the Cavaliers. I'm so happy that our team won the championship and everything. But do you guys think that Kyrie in general should be playing in the Olympic game? And I want to say, too, fellas, I want to hear what you all think. I think the Indians are definitely championship bound, and it could happen this year.
Wow.
I think it can.
Yes.
I want to hear what you guys got to say, okay?
All right, Reggie, good call. Fellas. Matt, you definitely have an opinion on this.
I do, and I thought, and it came, you know, just from, you know, Reggie's topic as you know, Jason Gibbs sent over the calls. I just know that with Kyrie missing the finals last year because of the injury and, you know, spending his offseason rehabbing, and I want what's precious to me now as a you know, the Cavaliers champion, along with LeBron and Kevin Love and the other pieces, I want my guys healthy. Mm-hmm. And I know that, maybe him going over to Rio and playing and representing the United States. That's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, you know, that he's had before and will have again if he chooses to play in future Olympics. But I would imagine that I just want to continue to enjoy celebrating and to take some time off and to reduce the risk of, you know, any type of injury that might deter us from repeating.
Well, a couple of years ago, he tried out for the Olympic team, and I think he broke his hand.
Yes.
During the practices leading up to that. I get what you're saying. I understand. I mean, you know, you'd like them to all live in glass bubbles right
I
now.
I would.
To make sure they're okay.
At least the big three.
Yeah, right. And Kevin Love has said he's not going to play, and of course LeBron told them he's not going to play either. I'm on the other side. I think that he deserves to play, and I think he really wants to play.
Okay.
And I think they gave him every possibility to not play.
Right.
Okay? But it's something I think he really wants to do. I think he was devastated when he got hurt that time and broke his hand. Now, the injury thing, you're right, okay? That's a problem. Remember Paul George had a devastating injury.
ACL.
Yeah, I mean, just a horrible injury
right.
when that happens. But that could happen. That could happen
if he's, happened walking
down
the
street. It could happen if he's working out.
You're absolutely right. And I understand that when you are in the rarefied air that Kyrie has kind of ascended to in the NBA, a lot of the guys that he probably associates with have a gold medal or an Olympic medal or played on an Olympic team.
You're right.
That's the Chris Pauls of the world. That's, of course, LeBron and Love and all of these guys. So it may feel at this point this is his one shot because you figure, well, heck, play at 24 so he doesn't have to play at 28 because at that time, hopefully he's still a Cavalier,
right.
you know, under contract. He'll mean more to us at 28, I think, than he might even do now at 24. So I'd rather have him to go kind of back. If you're going to do it now.
Yeah.
Get that gold medal.
Right.
And then at 28, go, hey, I'm going for a five-peat. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, I'm trying to win an NBA champion again, you know, for this fan base. I'm going to take this one off because I am getting up there in age. I'm playing a lot of minutes. And maybe at that point, he may not have LeBron, so he may be the face of this franchise.
I don't doubt that he will. I think the other thing is, I think he gets a chance to play for his college coach again.
Yeah.
And remember, he only played 11 games for him.
Yes.
Right? He only played in about 11 games that year. He had a foot injury. He missed most of his freshman year. He came back. He played in the ACC tournament and the NCAA tournament. But I think the number was 11 games total.
I think you're right.
And then he got drafted number one. I guess I'm the easy parent here.
Sure.
I'm going to say, yeah, I would let him play.
Okay.
If he wants to play, he's open. And I think he really does because I think he's got every out to not play.
Of course,
right?
Of course, and that's what
and
I'm.
And who would say to him, "Hey, listen, come on."
Right, and that's what I'm trying to give him those easy outs.
And they're probably fine without him.
They are.
Okay.
They probably are. But again,
are.
It's I appreciate the passion for him to want to go accomplish something so great like representing your country.
Yeah. Now here's the other thing, Matt. Consider now his first few years with the Cavaliers, he was on awful teams, you know, and now he's. He's in the spotlight.
Yes, he is.
And I think right now, after you watched him play in the finals, and I thought all throughout the playoffs, maybe just one bad game, and he had over 30 points in what I'm going to say. His bad game was in that game four. He had a bad fourth quarter against Golden State. But other than that, I thought he was magnificent.
Sure.
And right now, he's being talked about as perhaps the great point guard in the NBA.
Yes.
You know, or
maximize that opportunity.
He's right on the cusp of being named as the best point guard. I think that's important to him.
It is.
I think he really wants to
do
it.
I do, too. And I would imagine that if LeBron and him have a great relationship, LeBron at 31, Kyrie at 24, that I wouldn't be surprised that if LeBron goes, hey, I'm not going, but I think this would be great for you.
Yeah.
You know, and these are the reasons why. Because LeBron has the brand that Kyrie wants. LeBron has the career that Kyrie wants to ascend to.
Mm-hmm.
He has the following and so on and so forth. And this might be, you know, a notch on the belt for Kyrie to continue that step towards LeBron's, you know, top player in the game kind of pedestal.
Yeah. I think he really wants to do it, and I say go for it. Good for him. Good for him. Matt is in Massillon, and we welcome him to Cleveland Browns Daily. Hi, Matt.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Great to speak with you. It's an honor. I think one of the major things I think Kyrie is doing this is because this is the last time that Coach K is going to be coaching in the Olympics.
Right.
And he only got to play, 20 games or whatever it was that,
I think it was
that he was at Duke.
I think it was 11. I think he only played in about 11 games that year.
Yeah, and I think that's probably, I think that's one of the driving things that's you know, wanting him to go and see this summer out. My thing, and I know, Jimmy, you're close to the Browns. Obviously, you guys are all close to the Browns. Do you get this feeling that the Cavs winning it all is adding more pressure, not just to the Browns, but the Indians also, that the fan base is not going to sit around and, you know, no more excuses, get it done, because we've seen what an organization that is well built and has people in place that do their job, they will not put up with mediocrity anymore.
Yeah, you know, Matt, let me run this by you too, though. The NBA is so different than building a baseball team and certainly a football team, because look at what the decision and then you look at what the decision did a while ago, and then look at what the next decision did to come back to Cleveland. One guy can really change that around.
He can.
And make an organization go from total dysfunction to championship caliber. I mean, it looked like the Cavaliers were, you know, well, they were. They were a mess. They were at the bottom of the league, and understandably so, and nobody wanted to come here. And then he made that decision to come back again, and LeBron rejoins Cleveland, and suddenly the Cavaliers organization looks like a very shiny Cadillac or a Mercedes-Benz or whatever. But I
Absolutely.
Think I think sometimes it might be difficult, more difficult, for a football team, and certainly – And a baseball team, too, but definitely a football team, because it takes so many guys to make that.
Right.
What do you think about that, Matt? Am I off on that?
Well, the only reason I say this is because I was in a local bookstore, and now that we're being deluged by all the football magazines, the
right,
Smith
sure.
and Sporting News, they're all out. And I've been looking. Of course, I go right to the Browns, and you know, you see their dire forecast. And I think the most optimistic out of the five big-time football magazines I read – had the Browns winning three games out of the five that most of them had winning one or two. And they still point to the first thing they say is there's no quarterback, no mm-hmm. quarterback. You're not going anywhere.
Right.
You don't have a quarterback,
okay.
You know, and obviously, and I think maybe the quarterback, you know, obviously that's the most important position I think in sport. And I just think that, you know, hopefully the Browns, and I believe in Hugh Jackson, I really do. You just have feelings about people and the air that they carry themselves in and the belief in the system that they put in, and I have a really good feeling about him. And I just wanted to give my top couple.
Yeah, go, top three.
Cleveland
yeah.
moments. Definitely, obviously, number one is the Cavs winning it all. Number two, at least for me in my lifetime, probably, when this is pretty sad, I don't know, is the 2007 Eastern Conference Final, the shoot it, booby, shoot it kind of the feeling. That was definitely number two. And maybe it was a tie between the 1997 ALCS win over the Orioles.
Yeah.
And also the Run William Run, you know, your call actually in 2002, which was the highlight of the Browns, as they've been kind of rebirthed into the system. So I just wanted to thank you guys for all you guys do up there, and I appreciate it. Thanks.
All right,
thanks,
Matt. Great call. The shoot booby, that would be Booby Gibson. Remember,
yes.
He had that great game six against the Pistons. If you give us a call on the top three Cleveland sporting events in your lifetime. What's your top one? Everyone, I think, now is saying
it has to be this.
It's got to be the case.
And again, I mean, all those, the other Browns plays that, you know, in sports history are all when I was 4, 5, 6 years old.
Mark Mosley kicking the field goal against the Jets, and that comeback against the Jets at the stadium on a Saturday afternoon. The Browns were the top seed, and they were dead, though. I mean, they were going to be beat, and Gastineau nails Kozar, gets hit for a penalty, keeps everything going, and all of a sudden that thing turned around on a dime. And that was a great, great night in Cleveland.
I want to say the one again. I mean, again.
You were what, 4 years old?
I was four. I was four. The other one I have to say, and it's not essentially a Cleveland play, but Michael Jordan's shot on Craig Elo,
mm-hmm.
to me, is something. Because I was a Bulls fan. I was a little front runner as a kid. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
You know, so I was a Jordan fan. But it's like to have him make that shot and have it be historical in the way it was is something I'll remember from Cleveland sports history.
I was at my wife and I were getting married the next week when Jordan hit the shot. Okay, and the game was out at the Coliseum.
Yep.
And it was game five. It was a best of five at that time. Okay, it was the opening round of the playoffs. And the Cavs had won in overtime on a Friday night. In Chicago Stadium, the old Chicago Stadium, to force it to a fifth game. And it was her bridal shower on the Sunday afternoon, and the game was a Sunday afternoon game. And I said, I have to go to work. And she goes, you have to come to the bridal shower, and you at least have to say thank you to the people that gave us gifts.
Yeah.
And I said, how quickly can I do the thank you? She said, you have to stay for lunch, and then say the thank you after the first couple of gifts, and then on
dart out of the door.
So I did it. The game is underway. I get in the car. The event, the shower was in Strongsville. I blast my way on 303 to get down to the Coliseum. I listened to speaking of calls, I listened to the fabulous call of Joe Tate on the radio, and it was an amazing game. It was a back and forth. Nobody had a big lead in the game
right
up until the end. I walked in. I'm right behind the Cavs bench because I walked in with my press credential, and he hit the shot.
Oh, my God. So you had a floor perspective of the shot.
I was right behind Lenny Wilkins when he hit the shot. It was unbelievable.
Oh my
so
God.
We tried to get a live guest on the 6 o'clock news because it ran up right against the 6 o'clock news. And we had a live guest on, and I couldn't find anybody. And I get this big, tall assistant coach of the Chicago Bulls to come on named Phil Jackson. It was unbelievable.
Wow.
I mean, it was an amazing day out there that day when Jordan hit the shot. Anyway, we'd love to hear from you. And talk about things. I want to ask you this about RG3. I read in the paper where he had these marching orders, you know, to what to work on in these weeks before he starts camp. We'll talk about that.
Sure.
Because Matt from Maslin touched on the obvious big, big topic in the room as training camp starts every year, and certainly this year. Do the Browns have a quarterback in place? And we'll continue down memory lane here on Cleveland Browns Daily on a great Monday in Cleveland. Come on back with us right after a timeout.
Now back to Cleveland Browns Daily with Jim Donovan and Matt Wilhelm on ESPN 850 WKNR.
We are back with you on this Monday. Great day in Cleveland. They're all good right now, I'll tell you that, after what happened a week ago last night when the Cavs won the NBA championship. We've been talking kind of about that and how maybe the other teams, the Indians certainly, and the Cleveland Browns, might be affected by the excitement of the Cavaliers reaching the summit in the NBA and winning the championship. Or does that put a little bit more pressure on both organizations, Indians and Browns, to kind of get there and get that? Or can they just use it as motivation? I say take a step back and look at how the Cavs were received by Northeast Ohio and the fan participation and the love and the excitement, and say, hey, listen, I'm going to do anything I can to get a piece of that.
Correct.
Right?
I would want that feeling
absolutely
for me.
Joe Hayden came right out and said, hey, listen, this should push us on. I want that.
I don't think there should be any, you know, nobody with envy, you know, to what the Cavs did.
No.
If you are truly embracing Northeast Ohio and that's the one thing, my biggest take has been about this team and that celebration, that parade in particular, was LeBron being the only guy from Ohio. You know, yes, he's got all the pressure of the promise and coming back and promising the championship and seeing it through, but to see JR and Shump and Richard Jefferson and Channing Frye and Tristan, all these guys from all over the globe, essentially, you know, embracing Northeast Ohio and embracing that promise that one young boy from Ohio made when he came back here to bring a championship here.
Right.
That's what I loved about it. And I think that's the same thing can be said just on a larger scale when you look at the Browns or the Indians.
Okay, let's go to John in Aurora. Hi, John. Welcome in on this Monday on Cleveland Browns Daily.
How you doing, Jim?
Hello, John.
How are you, buddy? I just wanted to talk about, well, and I agree with you what you said, like this energy, I mean, it has to pick up, you know, the entire city. Like, I mean, there's no way it won't. Like,
yeah, they should bottle it and sell it.
I mean, I've been on cloud nine for 8 days now, like, and I haven't come down yet myself personally.
Good.
You know what I'm saying?
Good.
You know what I mean? But, yeah, my top three Cleveland sports moments of all time.
Go.
Besides this title, obviously, this is, like, the greatest, obviously. It's got to be way back in the day when 93, Carlos Baerga hit two home runs in the same inning from both sides of the plate.
You think did he do that against the Yankees?
It was against the Yankees, yeah. That was in 93. And
at the old stadium. Wasn't it at the old stadium?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I remember
that. I have a special, a cool thing. My family and I went down to Pittsburgh that day to see the Phillies play the Pirates at 105. Came home from that game and was like, hey, let's go to the Tribe game. So And then we saw that, you know, so I had two states, two leagues, two parks, wow, two games, and then that finished off that night. Like, I remember standing on the bleachers in left field just going crazy when he hit his second home run.
Yeah.
Like that. I mean, that was all time for me. Number two has got to be 95, welcoming the Indians back from Seattle at the airport.
Yes.
Like, kind of like the parade was, you know.
Hey, John, what time was that? What time did they get home?
Oh, God, maybe I think 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning. It was late, I know that much, because we didn't get back home here to Aurora until like 5:30 in the morning.
Right, because
like,
they were coming home from Seattle.
Yeah. Wow. And Hershiser had the MVP trophy in the window, and I jumped up and like slapped him five, and like I hit right in the trophy.
That was a great night. You're
that
right.
was a great night. And then this is kind of an odd one too, but I think when LeBron was with Miami and they came back like the second time and we beat them in Cleveland with him on the Heat, that just released like a bunch of, you know what I mean? Like to be, you know what I mean?
I remember that night. Yeah, you know I do remember that night.
That was a very eventful night too.
Those are good ones,
That's an interesting perspective.
Yeah, that was
really cool.
All three of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, John. That was good. I was in the locker room when the Indians won the pennant in 1995. In Seattle.
Did you get sprayed?
Yes. And I'll tell you, we were the only ones in there live for a long period of time because the game was on NBC. Channel 3 was an NBC station, so we had the rights to get in there before anybody else. So we were doing the locker room thing, and we were up on a podium doing the locker room thing like this. And first of all, champagne was stinging. I mean,
I bet it was.
Second of all, I had a navy blue coat on, and they started dumping the champagne on, and I went, hey, whoa. It's cashmere.
I have my one celebration story, and it happens to be when I ended up on the other side of it. And it was something walking into a locker room that I thought was so cool and so amazing, but after the fact it wasn't, was when I was with San Diego, and we were playing the undefeated, at that time would be 17-0 Patriots in New England in the AFC Championship game to go to the Super Bowl, which the Super Bowl they lost to the Giants with the catch.
Yeah.
But walking into the locker room and seeing the prep that they had done with the plastic rolled back, NFL.com, NFL Network had their cameras ready to roll on a potential celebration that would happen in the visiting locker room if we, the Chargers, had beaten the Patriots that day.
Right.
But then you walk back in and the camera, after the game, of course, I noticed the little things. It's like, the plastic is down, the cameras are gone, because at that point the game was over, we lost. So to see it prepped for the celebration got me giddy and happy.
Yeah.
And to know that it didn't happen that way was unfortunate.
Now, was that the game when Tomlinson was kind of hurt?
Yes.
Yeah.
And wore the dark shade with the cape on top of him.
The
yes.
Big parka
correct.
Over that. I remember that.
And I think Rivers played through like a partially torn ACL injury.
That's right. Yeah. Let's go to Dino the Trucker. Hi, Dino.
How are you doing there, Your Eminence? I heard about your...
I'm good. Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you, sir. Thank you. I'll come by and get my blessing later on.
All right.
But anyway, I'm very excited about the rest of this year because I really think that those other players and the other teams got to taste a little bit of the success from the camp. And they can see the enthusiasm in all the fans. The fans are always going to be there for these players. They just got to win and believe in themselves. And we're always going to be there for these teams. I remember watching the Cavaliers, watching that last game. And I'm thinking to myself, especially the last 53 seconds. Kyrie made that three-pointer.
Right.
And I'm thinking to myself, all right. And then LeBron got fouled.
Mm-hmm.
I went, all right, LeBron, just one free throw. And I'm in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, we're going to blow it. He's going to miss a goal. Steph Curry's going to come in. Because, you know, 52 years, I'm a 59-year-old man. So I'm thinking to myself, we're going to blow it. I know it's going to happen. And it just sunk into me a couple days ago that we're actually champions. And all you know what I'm saying is like a great reaction.
You are not alone with that feeling, Dino. I mean, a lot of people feel that they say, I can't believe that. They really did win it.
Right.
They really won it.
And you know what? I think to Dino's point, we're not necessarily saying and again, maybe we are, maybe we aren't. The Indians, whether they make the playoffs or they don't, whether they win a championship or they don't,
they're gonna make the playoffs.
Or the Browns, I think the steps that both that all three franchises are taking almost in unison.
Yeah.
The Cavs got it first,
yep.
which makes it that much easier for the next one to get it, or maybe it's a repeat next year. The monkey's off the back,
yeah.
right?
Yep.
So I think that everyone's going to sit back and ride the momentum and all take one big positive step mm-hmm. towards. And for the Indians, it's that void that's been mid-90s until now
right.
to get back to where they should be. For the Browns, it's been, you know, a couple little blips in the playoffs. But to take a big step towards looking like a team that you want to be proud of again.
That's it. That's it.
Yep.
I'm not looking for a – well, of course, I wouldn't deny it, but I'm not looking for this Cinderella story.
No.
That, you know,
because as soon as it comes, it can go away that
but
fast.
But I am looking for improvement every week. Entertainment. And I think this guy is the head coach is going to bring that.
Okay? I agree.
If only because, well, I think he's going to do it overall, but I think if only because he's going to make it fun when they have the ball again.
Yes.
Okay, then. Now, we got tastes of it, and our producer, Jason Gibbs, he realizes this too. We were there. When they won that Thursday night game down in Cincinnati a couple of years ago, and suddenly they're like 7-4, and they're in first place in the division, okay, and you're saying, I remember saying this is really happening. I
yes.
mean, they're doing things that they can. They know how to win this way.
Yep.
It's not pretty sometimes, but they know how to win this way. But I'll be a son of a gun. They came home the next week and they lose to Houston.
Yep.
And they
laid
weren't
an
even.
Egg.
And they weren't even in the game.
No energy.
No energy.
You're in first place
yeah.
for the first time
yeah.
in however, and you come out and lay it.
Yeah, and that's all I'm looking for with them. I really think the sky's the limit for the Indians.
Yep.
When you have pitching, you can go
yep.
a long way. So good for them. If they can feed on it, go get them.
Okay.
But I think reality is with the Browns, I just want to see improvement, competitive. I want you to go down there
yep.
on Sunday and say, you know what? Three things happen here and they can win.
Right. I don't mind taking an L as long as I know the team walking out's walking with a limp.
Yeah.
You know? Something.
That kind of L.
Or some
yeah.
bumps and bruises. You know? That's something that this fan base will be proud of.
Yeah. Absolutely. Now, see, folks, you got us worked up. All right. It was supposed to be a nice, easy day talking about memories. Okay? Suddenly, we're walking out with a limp.
That's right.
We're going to take a timeout, top of the hour. We're going to come back and we will talk about the 30th anniversary of a great young player, Don Rogers. If you remember him as a safety for the Browns out of UCLA, remember he died of a cocaine overdose. And I would urge you to read the article written by the author Jerry Bembry from the undefeated.com of ESPN. A great, great read, a very sad read, a very telling read about the aftermath of Don Rogers' family, in particular his son, and what they've had to deal with through that incredibly sad story. We'll do that and continue to talk with you on this Monday, having a great time with Matt Wilhelm and all of you on Cleveland Browns Daily here on ESPN 850 WKNR.